This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Milwaukee and Madison. The semi-private golf club held its grand opening June 20th. That means all 18 holes are now open. You can find out more on its website at clubatlaclabelle.com. We welcome in Gary D'Amato. I'm Rob Hernandez, and it is time for Talking.Golf. I'm back in California. Gary's back at home in Wisconsin. And Gary, I don't know if we've had a busier week than we had last week between the WPGA Junior Championship, the WSGA Match Play, both for men and women, a little controversy in the women. And then the Ray Fisher tournament through the weekend was absolutely spectacular in terms of how bunched and how low they went on that leaderboard. I need a day just to recover from all that.
Yeah, Rob, you know, speaking of bunch, the tournament schedule is pretty compressed because of COVID, wiping out a lot of stuff and moving stuff back into the summer. So that's why, that's one of the reasons we were so busy last week, and we'll continue to be busy, you know, through September now. But before I go any further, now that we've got the Zoom video feed, I see all those golf trophies behind you, Rob. Are those yours or Rachel's or somebody else's?
Most of those are, a few of those are Rachel's. A couple of them are actually ones that we won in a state, or not in a state, but in a father-daughter tournament over at the Bridges Golf Course back when we were there. Early in her career, they would have that once a summer, and it was fun. We've never played in the state father-daughter. It's a goal at some point. I may have to write for a sponsor's exemption because I'm out of state. I promise I won't play in the one back here. But those are mostly hers. And then just in your honor, Gary, back here is the Brewer bobblehead. And
wonderful.
So anyway, but we've all got, and you've got your plaques in the background. We'll have to tell Mike Davis to run the full video of this one as we as we do our podcast this week. But it's good to be back in California. Maybe we should start first with, because I got asked the question a lot, what was it like to travel? And it kind of relates to a lot of the things we'll be talking about as far as tournament golf and especially the Ryder Cup, because that was something that kind of came down. We talked a lot about it last week, but I don't know if you've had a chance to venture out through airports. Honestly, Gary, it to answer people's questions, we had three stops yesterday. We started in Milwaukee, went to Minneapolis, and then through Salt Lake City. So actually two connecting stops to get from Milwaukee to San Diego. Each airport had a different look to it, and a lot of the businesses that are in those airports are closed. Especially a lot of the restaurants, just because there isn't a whole lot of traffic in some of these places. It really started to pick up on the way back. There were some parts of, especially the Salt Lake terminal at the very end, we flew Delta, that, it was pretty crowded, and people were very respectful. A lot of people wore masks, not everybody. You kind of, especially, on the airplane, you are supposed to be wearing your mask at all times. I know that Minneapolis Airport had the option, but at some point here, Gary, the tricky part about running tournaments that have golfers coming from all over the country is how to get them there. And it truly, most the flights are either the middle seat is out, or Delta was 60% capacity yet. American filled the flight that we took out here, and but that's going to be an issue, I think, getting people around. And that seems to be, maybe where we have the most reluctance from people at the professional level from, competing full throttle at this point.
I'm really surprised, Rob, that you even saw people without masks in airports. I would think, an airport would be sort of a boiling room for the virus, with people traveling from all over and having contact with people from all over. I'm surprised. I don't wear a mask everywhere I go. I'll be the first to admit it. I didn't wear a mask covering the Ray Fisher, but I was social distance from everybody. I never got close to anybody, even conducting interviews. I was 6 feet away, but I would definitely don a mask in an airport.
Yeah, that one we didn't quite understand. And you know, we had just come off a flight where one person didn't, but you don't know. There is a provision if you have a health issue where, you know, that doesn't need to be, you know, that they don't need to be worn, you know, if in terms of, you know, I suppose it's breathing. You know, they did say on a sign right when we got off the terminal in Minneapolis that they were optional, and a vast majority did not wear them as we were passing through the wow. terminal. But, you know, it's only going to take you. I came, you know, as we were coming back here, you know, there's we got word in California that some of the bars and restaurants are having to close up again because of a spike in, especially in LA County. The governor's ordered a lot of closures over there. We think it might come to our county here in Riverside. In San Diego last night, when we got back, we went out to eat because we hadn't had anything. The layovers were very short, and you know, they made us wear a mask as we were approaching the podium and walking through the restaurant to our table. Once we got to the table, it was, you know, we could, you know, take our mask off. We sat at one of these bar tables, Gary, that I think we've all sat at, like at a Buffalo Wild Wings, where you can have, you know, multiple people on the same row. And they had partitions, you know, glass partitions, you know, there. We walked into one bar last night that we didn't stay at, but at the bar itself, they had little compartments of two chairs each, and in some cases three, with glass between the you know, the patron and the bartender. And to me, that's the one that's the, you know, can you imagine if we had been living in a COVID-19 era during the Cheers era, and you know, Sam Malone was trying to talk to Norm through some glass, that would have been really tough.
Yeah, you know, at the Ray Fisher, the Wisconsin Public Links Association, which runs the tournament, took every precaution. There was hand sanitizer everywhere. When you went in the clubhouse at Janesville Riverside, they had the plastic partitions between in the golf shop and when you ordered food at the concession in the restaurant area. But despite all that, we had at least one player that we know of test positive and withdrew, and another player. Who we're not going to name because that information was not made public, and I don't think we can make it public at this point. But it wound up two players withdrawing, as you know, Robin. John Jensen with the WPLA sent out an email to all the other players saying there had been a positive test. No one else withdrew, but a couple players I talked to after the final round said it definitely was on their mind, and it sort of brought it home and made it real that, you know, there were players, or at least a player or two, who had come down with the virus. So it was on everyone's mind for sure at the Fisher.
And I think, you know, going back over the 2-week stay that I had in Wisconsin, I think overwhelmingly people were, you know, still trying to come to grips with, you know, what this era we live in really means and how they feel about it. And, you know, there are some that, you know, did the fist bump, did the, you know, the elbow bump, and others that respectfully just asked that, you know, that, you know, no handshakes and that kind of thing. I think as we go forward, especially as, you know, the game of golf is going to continue to be played because it's a very socially distant sport. We've talked about that many times on this podcast. We need to continue to set a good example. And I believe that we're setting a good example, Gary, in terms of we being the game of golf, in terms of, you know, being, I guess, respectful of everybody's position on this and, and not making a big deal of it. And, if something happens, this positive test, I thought, like you said, I thought the WPLA did a great job of communicating that. Ultimately, it's in the hands of all of us and the golfers to make the decision as to what's best for them. And, I think in every tournament I was at, most everybody was, you know, perfectly fine in their social distancing and the recommendations that we're being asked to follow as we try to, you know, nip this thing in the bud. But, it'll be interesting to see as we go on to bigger tournaments and, you know, if we ever do get, you know, around to that Ryder Cup, that seems to be the one where we're not quite sure. And we continue not to be sure. We continue to hear, I know Nick Faldo made, some waves on Twitter yesterday when he kind of talked like the Ryder Cup was done, even though then some of the golf writers were tweeting at him like, you know, can I see that press release? We still haven't heard, Gary, the PGA of America come out and say we're not going to have the Ryder Cup in 2020. And until they do, you know, we can't say it's off, can we?
No, we can't. Even though no construction has begun up at Whistling Straits, But then again, I talked to a source who said that keep pushing back the date of when construction, sort of the drop dead date when the infrastructure would have to be built. At first it was, you know, a month ago, Steve Strecker said on his radio show, The Gulf Effect, that mid-June was going to be sort of the starting point for infrastructure. And then it was pushed to late June. And now I heard from a source that they're saying July 6th is the last date. That is the final date when, if they're going to have the Ryder Cup, they've got to start building it out, because that would be well into, you know, the 3-month window before the Ryder Cup is played. So we still don't know. We're still waiting. I suspect, Rob, at some point this week, we're going to get some kind of definite word on what's going to happen with the Ryder Cup this year.
Well, let's hope, because I know a lot of people are waiting to hear and, you know, looking forward to the fall. I think as I was back, Gary, the three things that people were most excited to have closure to is, you know, what's going to become of the Ryder Cup is a big one. But then also, you know, are we going to play college football, and how many people will be allowed in Camp Randall? Are we going to play professional football, and how many people will be allowed in Lambeau Field? I'm not even sure. I think we all want baseball and the NBA to come back. But I think a lot of people, I get the vibe, Gary, are okay if it, you know, with baseball and basketball, if it goes either way. Yeah, the Brewers and the Bucks are, especially the Bucks, you know, hugely promising. But, you know, I think we're looking to, you know, because we've been promised or we've been told that this thing should be, you know, somewhat either understood better or controlled better by the fall, that, you know, we should have some normalcy with our football. But, you know, between the college and pro ranks and the Ryder Cup, I think those are two big things that, you know, people were looking forward to on their calendars, and now they just don't know. And I suspect we'll learn about the Ryder Cup before we learn more about college football and the NFL. And like you say, sooner versus later would be nice, but it would seem like, as you said, the drop dead date for building out the Ryder Cup needs to happen pretty quick. And so we should know something pretty fast. And when we do, we'll have it on Wisconsin.golf, because Gary, once again, we're approaching 100,000 page views for the month, and we didn't have the AmFam Championship, and we didn't have the State High School Tournament Series, two big staples on our coverage. I guess it says a lot about our loyal audience.
It does, Rob. I think more and more people are finding out about us. We still have a ways to go to make I think you've done a great job with junior and high school and college golf, and a lot of those young, you know, golfers go to our site religiously. I think now we're still tasked with maybe growing our site with people who are a little older. But even I'm running into people now who know about us, and where last year I had a hard time, I'd say Wisconsin.golf, and older golfers would say, is that a magazine or, you know, but people are finding out about us, and it's a good thing, and we're growing. So,
And it's a perfect segue into our next topic, because I would hope at least one older golfer has been going to our site. His name is Joe Weber, because you've written about him ad nauseum, Gary, and that's a good thing for Joe Weber, because that means he's been in the hunt, not at one tournament, which he won yesterday, the Ray Fisher State Amateur Championship, but he was also in the finals of the WSGA State Match Play. And the guy, I mean, we've been blessed with a lot of great mid-amateur golfers that continue to be strong into their senior ranks, but, you know, there is a changing of the guard there too, from the, you know, the Gary Menzels and the Mark Bumowskis and the Archie Dadians, and we can go on and on, you know, of guys that have, you know, kind of played well into their 70s. Joe Weber, not obviously that old, but boy, his game is in absolutely fantastic form. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about Joe Weber, Gary, and what do you make of the guy being able to have enough stamina to rally past Matt Tolan and win the Fisher down at Janesville Riverside?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, you know, Joe's not ancient. He's 36, but in terms of some of the competitions that he's playing in, that skews toward the older end, because we have obviously a lot of college players, top high school players, college players, and guys who have just gotten out of college are sort of dominating these events. But Joe is 36, played at Marquette, and he's going to be playing in that Dairyland Duel coming up July 31st and August 1st, the matches between Marquette for alumni and Wisconsin alumni. So he's going to be the man to beat in those matches, I think, Rob. Him and Nick Nelson, who shot a 62, former Marquette player, shot a 60 Fisher. But yeah, but Joe had one of the best weeks of golf of his life. He got to the championship match, the match play at Strawberry Creek, and lost 4-3 to a golfer from Illinois, Chad Slutsky, and then went right to the Fisher. Luckily, he had packed enough clothes, he said, and played 72 great holes at the Fisher and wound up winning when, unfortunately, Matt Tolan couldn't finish it off after playing great for three rounds.
Yeah, it was amazing to watch that leaderboard yesterday as I was going through the airports. I mean, it just kept going deeper and deeper into red numbers. I saw Nick Nelson score. Nick was a hoot because the first day, he was a little bit late. Not late, they were running about a half hour behind because of an early delay on Friday. And then, he shows up to check on, when he was supposed to tee off. And, he's been around the block enough times to know that he doesn't need that much warm-up time. And although at his, he's getting into his upper 20s now, or mid-20s, and so he's gonna, it's gonna take more reps on the range to get to where he wants to be for the first tee. But it was funny because he played the first two rounds with Tony Romo and Garrett Jones, the former Badger. And he was a little bit discombobulated on the first tee because he tried to jump ahead of Tony Romo on the tee sheet. So he was eager to get out there. And of course, he's still doing the law thing, I think. And so the golf isn't, especially the competitive golf, not quite as frequent as it had been for him. But, he's a hoot. And I mean, the Ray Fisher, I wrote about it, on Friday for Saturday. A lot of Badgers played in it because it's a great tournament for college golfers to learn how to go low, learn how to make the next birdie, get comfortable being under par, and a lot of golfers were. And that tournament continues to hold a great place, I think, on the schedule for competitive golfers in the state.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I went back and did some history, and I can't remember exactly the year it moved to Riverside, that I think it was in the early 80s, right, that it that the Fisher moved to Riverside. But at any rate, the average winning score at Riverside is 274, 14 under. But over the last 13 years, it's 270, 18 under. And Joe Weber shot 269, so he was right around that average winning score. So you know going into the Fisher, if you want to win it, you've got to shoot 16, 17, 18 under. Or as Jack Schultz did a couple of years ago, 26 under two.
Wow.
So you've got to get to around 20 under to win that tournament, and everybody knows it.
Well, Ray Fisher is behind us now, Gary, and the schedule, again, looking back at last week, I think before we put a bow on it, the other thing that came up was we did have, and we wrote about it after we saw the qualifying for the match play. We continue to see a lot of out-of-state golfers playing in Wisconsin events because, let's face it, in Illinois, there aren't a whole lot of opportunities to play. And so we have that component bringing people in. And then, especially at the junior level, Gary, the Hunter Eichhorn path, Hunter Eichhorn, the Marquette golfer from Kearney, Michigan, has really, I think, paved the way for a lot of junior golfers to come down from the UP to play in our events because it's just they see them as better events and they're easier to get to. So a lot of the purists are looking at these leaderboards and seeing the different area codes, zip codes, addresses, you name it, and they continue to wonder, is it a good thing for golf that these out-of-state people are playing in the Wisconsin State Match Play, the Ray Fisher State Amateur Tournament, state implying Wisconsin? I don't have a problem with it, Gary. I'm not sure. We haven't really talked. How do you stand on it? And do you think we'll see any changes to the rules, that would prevent these golfers from competing in these events?
That's a really good question, Rob. And I talked to Bill Linneman last week, director of rules and competitions for WSGA, and they're definitely going to take a look at their residency requirements and rules for tournaments at the end of this year. When they put that rule in that non-residents could play, as you know, Rob, it applied mainly to college players who attended Green Bay, Marquette, or Wisconsin, and were from other states, but spent the summer in Wisconsin and established residency here, at least for the summertime. And so the WSGA allowed them to play in its events, but it was sort of murky the way it was worded, and so all these players came up from Illinois this year and played some of our events. I talked to a young man I knew nothing about, John Criscio from Lake Forest, plays out of Conway Farms down there, and he played in the Fisher and tied for second. I mean, nobody really knew the guy. He attends the Miami of Ohio but does not play on the golf team, and he was looking for some place to play, he looked up the fissure and saw the field and said, oh, it's a pretty good field. I recognize some guys. So he, quote, joined Blackstone Creek in Germantown, unquote. and he entered five scores and got established a handicap, even though he's never seen or played Blackstone. That's where he played out of, in the fissure. And so it's interesting. I think there's some looseness to those rules that are going to be tightened up.
Right.
Bill said this is a sort of a one-year deal because of coronavirus, and hopefully we go back to more normalcy next year and this disappears. But they do have to, I think, take a look at the way those rules are worded right now.
Well, and one of the things that's in the rules, Gary, that came to kind of come back to haunt one golfer in the state women's match play was the fact that if you do play in a Wisconsin event, at least one run by the WSGA, you can't play in the corresponding championship back in the other state. Or, and again, that's where it's kind of murky too. It actually does say that you can't play in any major championship back in your home state. If you're going to play in Wisconsin, you're going to play in Wisconsin in all the major events. And that didn't happen at the match play. A gal from the University of Minnesota golf team made it to the finals, and then it was discovered, even though it was widely reported that she had won the Minnesota State match play the week before, that, you know, they realized that, okay, we, you know, I just talked to Billy about the Illinois influence and presence in the state match play qualifying, and he explained that part of the rule. And then I think a lot of, you know, kind of light bulbs went off that this golfer didn't meet that criteria because she had already played it. In fact, when I ran scenarios by Bill last week, when I wrote the story, I said, so Bill, what you're telling me is, you know, if someone played in a corresponding tournament the week before a Wisconsin event, it would be easy to detect the, you know, whether they meet that part of the policy. But I said, what happens if they go from the Wisconsin State match play, let's say they win it, and then go back to wherever it might be, Illinois, Michigan, and that match play is either, rescheduled and put back on and they play it then, are you going to disqualify them or vacate their title? And he didn't really have an answer for that because it hasn't happened yet. And it's a hard one. It's one of those things where you'd probably have to get your greens committee together, your tournament committee together, and say, what do we do in this situation? But, I like the state open residency requirements where, you know, you either have to have played high school or college golf in the state of Wisconsin and establish some sort of roots. I think that's maybe, Gary, the one thing where, some of these golfers lacked was they were simply coming over the border to play in tournaments. They had never really been a part of the Wisconsin golf scene. I don't have a problem with the guys that you described and the gals, you know, that are playing on the Division I, II, or III rosters in Wisconsin from other states. They've invested, you know, a lot of themselves in Wisconsin golf by doing that. But I have to admit, it was really strange to see so many out-of-staters. And then, like you said, guys and gals that we've never heard of before, you know, do it. There was a wonderful young lady, Amy Kasura, from whose family has a place in Fontana. They play at Abbey Springs. I don't have a problem with that either. You know, if they're going to spend their summers in Wisconsin and, you know, have the means to, you know, go back and forth, I mean, you know, she too has invested a bit of, you know, herself in the state. That's one where I think might have a little discussion. These summer residents in Lake Geneva, Door County, the Northwoods of Wisconsin, there's other locations, the Wisconsin Dells. I think that there's probably an argument for not totally eliminating out of state play, but still having a relaxed rule. But at the same time, addressing what probably is a little bit of a quirk in the rule that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, you bring up a good point about someone winning a tournament and going later and winning that same tournament or a similar tournament in their home state. What to do about, do you vacate the title? It's interesting because I asked Chad Slutsky if he'd consider playing in our state amateur, and he said, well, no, because there's a four-ball tournament in Illinois that I have a partner. We play in it every year. So I asked Bill Lindemann, I said, is that considered a major championship? Because the rule says a major amateur championship from state. And Bill said, I really don't know. The wording is imprecise. And he said, it might be. So if the guy plays in this four-ball, what do you do about the match play title that he won? Bill didn't have an answer for that. And because these are things that they never considered would happen.
Well, and then I wasn't sure, you know, with the women's thing, whether the state women's match play was considered one of their majors, you know, or is it just simply the state open and the state, which again, the state women's open has always been open to everybody from anywhere. It, like a lot of state opens. And that was the rub last year when they changed the residency requirements for the men's state amateur, they had a women's state amateur that had virtually no residency restrictions. So the women could come in from anywhere, but the men, even the ones that were born and raised here and went off to play mini tour golf, couldn't. As I said, that's been changed, but it's made it kind of an interesting couple of weeks for us, Gary, to cover all these tournaments in the WPGA Junior. There was a young man from Houghton, Michigan, and then at the WPGA Players Tour event at Black Wolf Run Sunday and Monday, that was won by a young man named Bryson Mercier out of Powers, Michigan. He beat Ty Kretz, who we talked about a lot last week, in a playoff for that title. But and Bryson's a young man who reached out to me over the wintertime, Gary, and asked about the way that Hunter Eichhorn did it, if I have any advice for him, that kind of thing. And so he's clearly a kid who's got the bigger picture in mind, but is very much committed to playing all of his golf in Wisconsin because logistically in the UP, it makes more sense. And I think the state of Wisconsin should feel good about what it's done for Hunter Eichhorn, and especially good because it provided Marquette University with one of its best golfers ever. And I think there'll be cases for others, but it's a sticky situation and above our pay level in terms of giving us the final decision on it. But certainly we all have our opinions on that. I'll end it with this, Gary. I did have at least one person tell me that over the last 2 weeks that they really have enjoyed the Illinois presence in our fields because it made the tournament better. And I think if we go back to the era of Gene Haas, running the WSGA, the one thing, regardless of where anybody who was playing in the tournament was coming from, these events really set competitive golfers up to be good at their level, whether it's junior, men's amateur, women's amateur, and then especially as they segue into the professional ranks. I don't know how many times you and I have heard the four guys that came up in the same era, Skip Kendall, J.P. Hayes, Jerry Kelly, and Steve Stricker, applaud and thank Gene Haas for always making it tough on them. And that really, I think, is kind of the essence of golf competitively in Wisconsin.
Well, and Chad Slutsky, the guy, I was going to call him a young man, but he is 43 years old, who won the match play. He was effusive in his praise of the way the WSGA runs its tournaments. He just couldn't believe how well-organized the tournament was, how structured everything was. He said he kind of knocked the CDGA, the Chicago District Golf Association, and said they don't run tournaments anything like the WSGA. He said, you get the impression playing in CDGA events, and I don't mean to knock them. I'm just quoting what Chad said. He said, you show up at a golf course and play, and then it's like, well, let's get out of here. This isn't our golf course. Let's get out. So wow. WSGA and WPLA, they both do a great job running tournaments. And to their credit, as you mentioned, Rob, a couple of players I talked to said, hey, bring them on. I have no problem with Illinois guys competing. If it makes our tournament, the competition better, that's what we all want. And like Joe said, you still have to beat them in match play one at a time anyway, so it doesn't matter where they're from.
No, not at all. You're watching and listening to Talking.Golf, sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. Don't forget, all 18 holes now open in Oconomowoc. You can check out more on its website at clubatlaclabelle.com. Gary, we've looked back at the last couple weeks as we look forward to the next couple weeks. As we organized the week on our weekly staff call, a little bit of a lull compared to what we had last week and what's coming up in the next few, especially the next 3 weeks. But we've got the Balance and Believe Invitational at Blackhawk Country Club today, an event that I normally cover because it falls within that window of time when I'm back, but they had to move, much like the events last week, because of that whole AmFam championship being moved and then the state high school tournament being moved. Everything kind of dominoed there. 36 holes. The field includes Jordan Hahn, the former Badger, who's has conditional status on the Corn Ferry Tour, and John Langhoff out of Pewaukee, who had status on the Canadian Tour, but of course the Canadian Tour canceled for this year because of COVID-19. And Peter Webb, Zach Goggard, a couple of mini tour guys who have spent the winter down in Arizona trying to get ready for whenever the next Q school might occur. So that's a big one. We've got the Dells Junior Championship. Again, Gary, I go back to the fact that if you and I had to go back in the Wayback Machine, we'd be junior golfers again, because I don't remember ever having the opportunity to play Wild Rock and Trapper's Turn or courses of that nature on back-to-back days when we were growing up.
No, the big one was the Mike Bancroschuto Junior Masters at Johnson Park, which was still a very nice tournament. But I mean, yes, that was the big event in the state other than the state junior. So, yeah, there's a lot more tournaments and places to play for young boys and girls now.
And we also have coming up throughout the week and throughout the next 3 weeks, some of the most sought after spots in the Wisconsin State Amateur Qualifying are up for grabs. A lot of golfers back at Janesville Riverside today. I love what Bill Linneman and the crew over at the WSGA have done in terms of always having that first qualifier the day after the Fisher back at Janesville Riverside. If you haven't had enough of Riverside, and let's face it, Gary, I hope you had a Riverside burger, because you know, that's worth going back for. But if you can get a burger and a spot in the State Am at Milwaukee Country Club, my friend, that's a good day's work. And hopefully some there'll be about four or five you know, golfers that come away from there today with that distinction.
Rob, I had a burger one day and I had a BLT slathered in mayo the other day, and they were both outstanding sandwiches. I put on a couple pounds at covering the Fisher, even though I walked a lot.
I know. And don't talk to me about weight, because between the Glazers at Quick Trip and the burgers at Culver's, I'm you see a lot more of me now on this little Zoom thing than you did 3 weeks ago. So. we also have coming up a lot happening at Whistling Straits, not related to the Ryder Cup, of course. The Wisconsin Cup, the event run by Pearson Hunt, the Illinois-bound golfer from Heartland Arrowhead, the former state champion, with the help of the AJGA. Hunt, Pearson is holding a two-day event, again, much like the Wisconsin-Minnesota matches that the Wisconsin Marquette matches that are continue to add players to it. Pearson continues to add players to the Wisconsin Cup because they want, there's a lot of kids who want to play Whistling Straits and want to raise money for the MAC Fund and WPGA Junior Foundation, and then a charitable component through the AJGA that helps kids that can't afford to play on that tour do so. And that'll be Friday at the Straits course, and Friday at the Straits course, Saturday at the Irish course up at Whistling Straits, and then a whole lot more junior golfers come to Whistling Straits on Sunday and Monday for the annual Golf Coaches Association of Wisconsin / WPGA College Showcase. Gary, I can't think of a more important time for kids that need to have a showcase than right now. You got to talk, I think, to Tyler Beck, who's going from Winona State to Charleston Southern. We've got a lot of movement in college golf, and we've got a lot of colleges recruiting other college rosters as kids that are looking to go on to grad school, but maybe not at their current school. To be able to be showcased is going to be really critical over the next 3 years. And I think the Wisconsin junior golfers are very lucky to have this event to be able to at least get out there and find out what it might take to get to this next level in the COVID-19 era.
Yeah, and speaking of Tyler Beck, Rob, he played in that final group in the Fisher, in the 36-hole finale. They didn't repair any of the groups for the final round. And so I got to see a lot of Tyler, and really impressive player, Rob, as you know. I mean, he hung in there in the Fisher, and, you know, but for a couple putts that didn't drop, he would have been right there, you know, in that playoff too. Hit a lot of quality shots. He had some great iron shots to within, you know, 10, 12 feet of the hole on probably five or six holes. Could have made a couple more putts, and, you know, he would have been right there. So that's another young man to watch in the future. I was very impressed with his game.
Well, I think, you know, what you saw with Tyler Beck and with Joe Weber is probably a great lesson that all of us could, you know, stand to learn from, in that you can always get better. And Tyler Beck came to Winona State from Sheboygan Falls. Tyler was in the same class as Matthew Bachman, who went to Marquette. So played in the shadows a lot, but went to Winona State, took advantage of the opportunity. And he and a kid named Brady Madsen, who's going to transfer from Winona State to Florida Gulf Coast for two more years, you know, they really, again, had Winona State in the rare position. There aren't a lot of Division II schools in the upper Midwest that make an impact on the radar nationally at the college level in that division, but they were on the cusp of doing it, and Tyler Beck was a big reason, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do with that extra year at Charleston Southern and being able to have a Division I opportunity for 1 year. But again, it just goes to show you that if you invest the time and the effort and the focus in college golf at any level, one, two, or three, divisions one, two, or three, you know, there's a pretty good chance that, you know, you're going to reach that kind of that perfect point of maturation between the physical game, the mental game, and then just the whole confidence of both, and be able to play the way those guys did last week. And I'm glad you got a chance to see Tyler play, because he is a great kid, and his star continues to rise. Gary, before we wrap up the podcast, we've got a lot of golf course news. We'll have more on the Bull of Pinehurst Farms today. Dennis McCann sat in on the bankruptcy hearing. It looks like we're going forward with the new owner there. That's good. You wrote last week about the sale of Waunakee Golf Course in Menomonee Falls. Let's just sort of review that and what that means for public play in the Milwaukee area.
Rob, that was a really good story about a golf community that rallied around a municipal course and basically saved it from bulldozers. As people might remember, Waukesha County was going to shut down the course at the end of the 2019 season, but there was such a public backlash that that the county agreed to keep it open for this year. And then at first sought someone to lease it. When that fell through, they had a deadline for a buyer and to keep it a golf course, and that deadline was June 30th, and if no buyer had come forward, then they would have sold the golf course for the highest price and best use, which would have probably meant development. So the Storm family, which has operated golf courses and ranges in the Milwaukee area for almost 70 years, stepped up, bought Waunakee, and has plans to improve the clubhouse and add a bar, get a liquor license. But the most important thing, the point to come out of this all, is that the public pressure basically saved the golf course, and Waunakee is going to be a golf course for hopefully many, many years to come now.
Well, that's great news. And again, one of the things I plan to do is as I settle back into my normal routine back here is to kind of analyze some of the tee sheets that some of the more popular public courses around Wisconsin, look at Brown County in Green Bay, Odana Hills in Madison, Deer Park in Milwaukee, and then Nagawaki and Pewaukee. You know, just I anecdotally, when I was trying to look for tee times, you know, wondering if I might play a couple more rounds than I did, it was hard to get on courses. And that's the one thing I heard from, you know, when I saw Tom Halla at the Ray Fisher on Friday. You know, he said that they're pushing, you know, 300 rounds per day is more the norm than the exception now. And that was probably flipped, you know, even last season, where you might get up to 300 on a Saturday or a Sunday, but you know, there might be dead periods during the week. We have time to play. People are rediscovering the game. Public golf is in the best shape I've seen it in many, many years, Gary.
It's really an interesting anomaly how this is happening, whether it's mainly due to coronavirus or that there's sort of been an offshoot of that. I mean, we're going to have to try to figure that out as time goes on. But I talked to a buddy who plays Nagawaki regularly, and one weekday last week, every tee time was filled from 5:40 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. When he asked about a tee time, they said, well, you can get on at 6:30, and he thought they meant a.m., and they said, no, that's p.m. So that was the first available tee time. So it's crazy what's happening.
Yeah, it's patience, preparation, you know, advanced planning. I mean, it's really weird. And, you know, again, we've kind of whittled some of the courses down across the state. Well, and then the other thing, Eric Smolt of the Janesville Gazette, who was out covering the Fisher, did a nice story a few weeks ago. If you come down to I don't know which way you go to get to the Fisher at Janesville Riverside, Gary, but if you come down from Madison on Highway 14 and then take what used to be called Business 14, for many, many years there was a little driving range and par 3 course called Hackbarth Hills. And for the better part of maybe 10 to 15 years, Hackbarth Hills has grown over. It closed. It's been grown over. This year, Eric wrote that a member of the Cullen family, which is a prominent family in Janesville, bought and opened the driving range portion of the property. So you even have shuttered driving ranges reopening as people are just, you know, trying to, you know, get out and have something to do besides walking the neighborhood. And especially, you know, the people who are still waiting for their jobs to come back and for normalcy to come back, you know, an opportunity to get out and play. Again, the cute stories that we're seeing, you know, throughout the state where this is happening, I think are really good for the game of golf. So we'll see if it has a shelf life beyond just the pandemic. But it's good from the standpoint of Wenatchee that at least for another, you know, hopefully 8 to 10 years, we don't have to worry about them closing. You never know with any golf course anymore what the long range plans are for these places. But it looks like Wenatchee's in good stead for a while. The other thing that made news last week, Gary, Century World not opening until after Labor Day. And that means that the Wisconsin-Minnesota Junior Cup matches, which had already been postponed from essentially this week into next month, are now being moved to Stevens Point Country Club, which is not a bad place to move to if you've got to go from one course to another. It's one of the benefits of golf in central Wisconsin. You know, they cited the COVID-19 situation as a reason for doing that. And again, you know, we are not to question, you know, the reasons for these things happening. We just hope that that golf course owners and operators at all levels, and Century World is one of the great beacons of great golf in our state. And for them to have to wrestle with this all the way through the summer is just really, really strange. Really, really kind of, you know, hard to see a course that's not going to open until Labor Day.
Well, 2 points about Century World, a place that I absolutely love, is one, if you want to play Century World when it opens at September 8th, you better get a tee time because September is a great month to play golf. That's a great golf course, and there's going to be demand to play there. So it's going to be a four-week season basically up there, I think, you know, if they're lucky, getting into early October. But the other thing I wanted to point out about Century World is they can – this is a course that can do that because it's owned, of course, by Century Insurance. And, you know, they spare no expense taking care of that golf course. 15-minute tee times. It's just a delight to play. But if without an insurance company backing it, you know, they probably couldn't do that. But they're taking every precaution. And I'm going to try to sneak up there myself and play, Rob, if I can, sometime in September.
Oh, that would be sweet. I know that it's one on my list when I'm looking at if I had to go play a course when – the fall colors are at their finest. Century World is one of them. And then, of course, all the courses through the Northwoods, through the from Inshallah and Tomahawk, all the way up through you know, Timber Ridge and around to St. Germain, Eagle River, and then back down to Northwood and Rhinelander. You know, again, we're blessed at various times of the year to have golf experiences that you really can't find anywhere else. And Century World is definitely one of those. You've got your plans for Labor Day, Gary. Are you a guy that has any plans? We're coming up on 4th of July weekend. Do you have any golf traditions for that holiday?
Yeah, I really don't have a golf tradition on the 4th, but I just wanted to mention one guy I know who does, Carl Meyer, member at Shaniqua Country Club. His son, Drew Meyer, punted for the Badgers a few years ago. Carl, for about 10 or 12, maybe even more years than that now, has played at least 100 whole golf holes on the 4th of July to raise money for Hire Heroes USA, which helps veterans find jobs. And he's done this for a long time. He's raised, it's going on close to $1 million now, single-handedly, wow, by pledges and donations. And he tries to play at least one more hole than the preceding year. So I think he's up to playing 113 holes of golf in one day.
Wow.
Challenge Joe Weber for Golfing Marathon, I think.
No question. Yeah. What a great tradition. And we're coming up too. I think our golf fans, if you're a member of clubs, we're approaching that point in the summer where the junior golfers also participate in that longest day of golf. I believe it's American Heart Association that benefits from that. And you know, when I talked to John Jensen at the Ray Fisher, I said, boy, the one thing you have back in Wisconsin that we don't have in California are the longest days. I mean, you can. I mean, you can play at 5 a.m. at Nagawaki. You can play at you know, 7 p.m. and still get at least nine holes in at courses around the state. You know, the daylight is so robust there because of where you are in the time zone and where you are in terms of the globe. But I hope that his 4th of July is every bit as fun and productive as it has been in the past, and that the weather holds, because as we all know, that's the big key in that. I don't have any 4th of July traditions either, Gary. When we were back in Wisconsin, we towards the end of our time there, we would often go up to Door County and stay, do some camping, and then stay with friends, you know, or see friends up there that have a cottage. And we would ultimately go to the orchards at Egg Harbor. And that yeah. became the go-to place. One of the years we played around at Maxwell and Braes, which was a great fun course. And then, of course, we would try to hit Peninsula State Park. But every year we would get back to the orchards at Egg Harbor because, you know, it was a newer course and just, you know, kind of a fun, sporty course that, you know, was well-maintained and didn't beat me up quite as bad as Peninsula would. There's a couple of tight holes at Peninsula, but Door County would probably be the go-to place for us that that weekend. But, you know, there's so many golfers out there playing on 4th of July weekend, Gary, and as we talked about, they're not going to take the foot off the gas this year, are they?
It sure doesn't appear that they will. Yeah, courses are packed, and as we said, I don't know how long this can last, but I hope that people, Rob, who, you know, fell away from the game and are now playing again because there's not much else to do, fall back in love with golf and become regular golfers again. And I think, and hopefully we're going to see that happen.
Well, I hope they discover what's good in the clubhouse too, like we did at Janesville Riverside with the burgers and the BLTs, yeah. because I think at some point here, we're going to start leveraging our golf community and trying to find out where we have some of the best. I think Sarah Starmer on our Facebook accounts is trying to do some surveys and some games to, and maybe give out some prizes as we find out where the best burgers are, where the best fish fries are. Yeah, it's this has got a lot of potential, this rebirth and this boom of golf here during the COVID-19. So we'll see where it takes us. Gary, I appreciate your time this week here on Talking Doc Golf, and we'll do it again next week. And who knows what's in store for us as we continue to ramp up the tournament coverage.
All right, Rob, sounds good. Looking forward to talking to you again.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, I am Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking Doc Golf, sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Madison and Milwaukee. Remember, the semi-private golf club held its grand opening on June 20th. That means right now, all 18 holes are open. You can find out more on its website at clubatlaclabelle.com. We'll talk golf again next week.